Hello and welcome to another great episode of the Pluralcast. This is your host, David Starr, and today we're talking with Microsoft MVP and consummate web developer Dan Wallin about jQuery. Now, before we dig in with Dan, of course, we're going to get our fix with Kate Gregory's Visual Studio Kung Fu. All right, Kate, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
We're going to close out a pretty in-depth look at Pro Power Tools today, I believe.
That's right. I'm a huge Pro Power Tools fan, and it's a giant bundle, and I've just been telling you about some of the parts that I actively like and use, and so I have a few pieces left that I wanted to tell you about today.
All right. What's the first one? Because as you know, when you talk about these things, I tend to have Visual Studio open so that I can play with what you're talking about as you describe it, and I always learn something. So I'm looking forward to this.
I think that's a great idea. Everybody should do that. When you get Pro Power Tools, if you open a solution that you've had open before where you have a bunch of documents open at once, visually you'll immediately notice, hey, the tabs across the top are all different colors now. And by default, what makes them all different colors is what project they came from. So my projects very often will have classes with the same name in different projects. So like I might have employee.cs in data and in business logic. And then when you've got a ton of them open, you're like, which employee do I want to click on? Now, you can just hover. Visual Studio will tell you the full path when you hover over the tab. A lot of people don't know that. But by default, Pro Power Tools will color code them so those two employee tabs are different colors.
Although the colors that I'm seeing, and maybe I don't have it set up right, but the colors that I'm seeing are very subtle differences. They're all sort of shades of different shades of blue, it seems.
Well, there's a lot of pastel action, that's for sure, but you can take control over it. I haven't done it, but you can apparently use some regular expressions and set up whatever coding rules you want.
Huh. Okay.
It certainly makes, if you like drag a file of XML in from elsewhere and that kind of thing, it certainly stands out from the crowd when you do that.
Well, my inattentive history with Visual Studio is showing because I'm just noticing the difference in those colors, and I've had it for a while. But, so, now I know what that means. Thanks.
The other thing you can do with those tabs is you can pin a document into your tab well. So if you've got like 20 documents open and you're bopping around amongst them, there may be one that you want to keep coming back to all the time, no matter what else you open and close. So you can actually pin them in place.
Right. My config file.
It could very well be. Absolutely. So just some little subtle changes to the document tabs, and there's actually tons more, but those are ones that matter to me. And the last piece of Pro Power Tools I wanted to tell you about was Control 3, which is technically called Quick Access. And Control 3 is sort of the anti-ribbon. You know, the reason that the ribbon went into Word was because people kept asking for features that were already in the product that they couldn't discover.
I remember hearing that.
Yeah. So something like, you know, 80 or 90% of the product requests would be things like, hey, you know what would be cool would be if there was a way to count how many words were in my document, that kind of thing. So Control 3, Quick Access, up comes a dialog and you type something in like Zoom or Debug or File. And you get told, here are menu options, here are some settings that you might want to go fiddle with under Tools Options, here's some toolbars, here's how everything Visual Studio has that's related to that word that you just said.
Ooh, nifty. Okay. Yeah.
So if you're lost about how to do something, a common task in Visual Studio, it's sort of, because there's literally dozens of toolbars and tool panes and menu options, it can be very difficult to find things. You're like, I'm sure there's a way to do this. That's what Control 3 is for.
Very cool. So the next time my wife asks me how to do something in Word, and of course I don't know because I don't know Word very well, I'll just tell her to hit Control 3. This is great.
Good strategy. Go with that one.
Thanks very much, Kate.
Thank you.
All right, the next time we talk to Kate, we'll be moving past those Pro Power Tools and onto some new Kung Fu moves. So we got the basics down. Dan Wallin is a web developer with tons of experience in .NET, Silverlight, and SharePoint. He is an MVP for both ASP.NET and Silverlight, and the creator of XML for ASP.NET. In addition, Dan is the founder of the Waleen Group, which specializes in consulting around the technologies we've already named. The author of several books on .NET, and not least of his accomplishments, is the author and recorder of Pluralsight's jQuery Pluralsight On Demand course. So Dan, why in the world is jQuery so popular?
It's a good question, and one I asked myself a couple years back because I wasn't using it at the time. And I decided to jump in with a project. It was an ASP.NET MVC 1 project, so several years ago. And up to that point, you know, I've been really writing my own custom JavaScript. So anyway, long story short, I jumped in and was kind of like, whoa, as I like to say, light bulb moment. And I instantly learned the reason it's so popular is, number one, you don't have to deal with all those cross-browser issues. Number two, you write a lot less code, which, number three, makes you a lot more productive. So I think that's kind of the top three reasons I'd say that I like jQuery.
So when you say that, though, are you saying in the context of if I had to write my own JavaScript and this is better, or are you saying that this is a good way to write apps?
I think both, actually. Definitely for your first point with writing custom JavaScript, definitely it's a lot better than writing custom JavaScript. You know, those of us been doing web apps a long time, that's kind of how we learn. And, you know, I remember I built an IE3, believe it or not, app, which is probably one of the worst browsers ever invented. But anyway, it was rough, man. I had to write all my custom JavaScript. Plus, I had to work on, I think it was Netscape 4 at the time, or Netscape 3. I can't remember. But, you know, long story short, again there, it was a rough process. And so nowadays, it's even worse because, you know, you have Chrome and Opera and Safari and Firefox and IE and all the IE versions, including the lovely IE6. So, yeah, from that standpoint, it's awesome. Also, I just think in general, from an app building standpoint, it's great. And the reason being, in addition to writing less code, it's just easier to find things in your DOM, you know, your document object model. AJAX calls are a matter of just a couple lines of code. There's built-in AJAX functionality to get JSON or to make full-blown with where you have complete control over it type calls. So it's really powerful little script library.
So you just said it's a script library, and we should probably pause to back up just a little bit for those who maybe haven't jumped in to use jQuery yet and talk about what it is at its core.
Yeah, that sounds good. So it's a script library, like you just brought up. And the nice thing about it, it's really small. If you run off to jQuery.com, you can get this library. And, you know, they have a production version, which, you know, I'm right here on the web. Let me look. This will be live check. I think it's 27K.
So that's the minified version?
Yeah, so production version is the minified. It's actually 29 now with jQuery 1.5.2. And so it's only gone up a teeny bit in the last couple of versions, which is amazing because it was 27. And then, you know, the development version's bigger because it's not minified or minimized, whatever you want to call it. The white space is in there and stuff for debugging. But that's it. Yeah, it's a script library. You literally just add a script tag, add the source, point to you either what we call a CDN, a content delivery network, like Microsoft or Google, where they host this script. Or you can, of course, download it locally and host it there. And from there, you just start doing your thing.
I'm curious, with the people and teams that you work with, are people getting more comfortable letting that script library live out there on a CDN versus hosting it themselves?
Yeah, it really depends, I think. You know, if you're doing an intranet app, then I'd probably say, you know, what's the point of going to a CDN? The big benefit of the CDN, which, you know, CDNs, they've been around for a while, but it's typically in the past been more for media, you know, videos, things like that, for content delivery. Take the Microsoft CDN as an example. The big benefit you get there is more internet-facing apps. And the reason being, if you go to, say, CNN.com, and let's just pretend they were using jQuery, they might be, I don't know, but, and they were using the CDN, and then you go to my site, which also loads jQuery using the Microsoft CDN, it's cached now. So now you don't have to re-download that file because the domain is the same on both websites. So that's kind of the big bang for the buck you get. Plus you get the locality or regionality, whatever you want. I don't even know what the word is, where if you're in Europe, you're going to hit a CDN server in Europe probably. You know, if you're here, I'm in the Phoenix, Arizona area, and we'll probably hit one right here in Phoenix, I suspect. I'd have to, you know, do a trace route or whatever, but that's kind of how it works. Those are the two benefits. So if you're in an intranet environment, I don't know that you get as much bang for the buck because, number one, I've actually been to some companies where not everybody can get to every website out there, and so that could be blocked. Or, number two, you know, it's not like everybody on your company is going to the same websites internally even. You have very specialized finance apps and HR apps and things like that. So you may not be able to leverage the caching as much, I guess is my point. But if you can, then, you know, go for it.
Okay. There seem to be these two scenarios, I guess, that tend to get a team thinking, hey, we ought to look at jQuery, at least in my experience. And those two things that sort of start us off down this path of I wonder what's in that jQuery box tend to be things like validation, all right, like client-side validation in my browser, and popping up some kind of overlay box. Those two simple little things tend to get people thinking, hey, maybe jQuery is an answer here. Are those two things in jQuery, and how does it do it?
So they're actually not built in directly. They're plugins, actually. There's jQuery Validates, very, very popular. In fact, ASP.NET MVC 3, out of the box, supports jQuery Validate. Really, really nice. And then there's also, if you go to jQuery.com, on the very top of the page, you'll see this UI link. And jQuery UI does the cool stuff you just mentioned, which is the little pop-up dialogues and things. With literally like one line of code. It's amazing. I mean, you can gray out the background, pop up a dialogue, and it's like, look, mom, no code. You know, it's crazy how easy it is.
And is jQuery UI also a plugin?
Yeah, it's, now those are officially sponsored, as in the jQuery team or whoever's involved there wrote those particular ones. But yeah, those are, in essence, they're jQuery plugins. That's correct. And they have a bunch more, you know. There's an accordion and tab controls. They have a new button one they just added that just makes your button look pretty, really cool without knowing what you're doing. So, yeah.
So what's a plugin?
So a plugin is basically just a set of jQuery extension functions. And so jQuery is very extensible, and they kind of built that into this core jQuery framework, which was pretty genius, I think. And that's really why it's taken off. I mean, jQuery on its own, really, if you break it down, it does, there's more than this, but it kind of does three main things. It does what we call selectors. And selectors are a way to select items in the DOM. And it just makes it so easy to select things by class name or by tag or by ID or whatever it is. The second thing is it has a really robust event handling infrastructure built in. And so cross-browser, that's a pain in the rear, especially with IE6 in the mix. That's just easy with jQuery. That's the easiest way to say it. And then third, you have the AJAX stuff I talked about. And that's kind of the core, the three pillars in my mind. There's other stuff, but that's kind of the three. So the jQuery plugins extend and build upon that foundation and do things like you just said, like UI for dialogues. Or one of the ones I've used recently is a really cool plugin called Data Tables. You can go to datatables.net, and it turns tables into filterable, queryable, what else does it do? Pageable things with literally one line of code, and then you can customize. So that's it, though. Plugins are a set of extension functions that add to this foundation I mentioned.
And those get called then from the core jQuery library?
So you extend your jQuery plugins. You have to write some very specific syntax to do that. And then those extension functions will call back into the core jQuery library to do things like selectors, events, AJAX calls, stuff like that.
Okay.
So plugins literally just build upon the concrete that jQuery provides, and then they build the building that, you know, renders grids and things.
So does this adding a plugin actually come down to me just making yet another script reference in my web page?
That's it. Yep. So for datatables.net, you'll represent, you'll reference, if I could say it right, that particular script. And so typically you'll reference the jQuery script first, then you'll put your plugins below that, and that's exactly what you do. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And I know that jQuery, I don't know if it's the jQuery team or the community or what, but they've been releasing some plugins specifically looking at features in HTML5.
Yeah, we recently just, and we being, Corey Schumann and I were the main kind of stakeholders with John Papa, who is actually on the Silverlight team, and because we also do a lot with Silverlight, we were asked to build this application that was HTML5 based and jQuery. So one of the things we put in this application is some SVG, scalable vector graphics, which is basically a way to render whatever you want, really, but without pixels. It's scalable, meaning that you can zoom in, zoom out. It's vector graphics. And then we also had to use the canvas for charts, stock charts. That is actually not, I won't call it child's play to do, for instance, the canvas. It's a lot of pretty heavy JavaScript, which we could do, but we had a really short time frame to build this application. We built the whole thing in about 2.5 weeks. And it's a pretty robust little app. As a result of that, I kind of made the decision, hey, you know, I could waste the time doing my own Canvas code because it's not rocket science, but it is, you know, a little more involved. And I said, let's go see what's out there. And I found several plugins. One of them, I don't know if I say it right. I think it's Flot, or it's Float. I think it's Flot, but it's F-L-O-T. And it's a plugin that you give it the data points, and it will actually render an HTML5 canvas for you, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, nice.
The other one was called Raphael. And I don't know if I'm saying that the right. I guess that's Italian. Yes. So anyway, this other one renders SVG, scalable vector graphics. And the SVG actually is, I don't think that one's as hard. It's more tag-based. It's like doing XAML for those that have done Silverlight. But this plugin does it for you. You give it the data points, and voila, you have a pie chart or bar chart or whatever you want. So, yeah, so there's even stuff targeting HTML5.
Well, that's cool because as people talk about HTML5 and what the canvas provides us, that dynamic sort of report generation and manipulation of data, all that stuff is what people really want out of it. So these are ways to do that quicker and easier, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't think we could have integrated the canvas features as cool as they are because the charts look really nice. They have some nice gradients and stuff. And, you know, while we could do that, it would take some work to get all the charting right. And this was a kind of a line chart type plot, you know, a typical stock chart. And you could definitely do that. And, you know, you could probably even do it in less than a day if you knew the API well. But I think people that are new to this that really, A, maybe don't do JavaScript as much and they're wanting to move to the whole kind of HTML5 revolution and jQuery, you know, there's a learning curve there. So these plugins really, really kind of take down that curve.
And there's another feature that's fairly new to jQuery that I know a lot of people are excited about, and that's templates.
jQuery templates. So John Rezig, who, you know, is the jQuery creator, I don't know how long ago, probably at least a year and a half ago, I'd say, I started using these. He released this teeny, teeny script that would let you embed templates in your web page, and then you would bind JSON data to those templates at runtime on the client side, you know, in the browser. And it was just teeny, teeny, teeny. Well, then that kind of evolved, and Microsoft kind of built their own template type framework as well around, I think, that and their stuff. I'm not sure how much of his played into theirs, but they ultimately released this jQuery template spec out there. And it's not built into the jQuery core at this point. I hope it will at some point because it's just a phenomenal feature. To make sure for those that are more maybe you know, ASP.NET or server-side based and haven't done as much with jQuery, you know, when you use a grid view control, you can do item templates and edit item templates and all that good stuff. So it's really easy on the server side to say, hey, here's a template, I'm going to feed the data to the template, and then it just magically renders the HTML. Well, in the client-side world, in the, you know, back in the old days, like a year ago, we'd have to write all that JavaScript ourselves because there was no templating infrastructure. And I shouldn't say there was no. There's actually been, for quite a while, several jQuery and even other, you know, there's a lot of other good script libraries out there. There's Dojo and Yahoo UE and all that good stuff, Prototype, Moo Tools. But those, I never really liked them, to be honest, some of the plugins that were kind of templatized plugins. And the reason is because they did a lot of weird kind of like CSS hacks and just some stuff that I was like, eh, I don't know if I buy into that. These templates are much, much more like what an ASP.NET or, you know, even anyone that works on the server side that has templates, person, developer, would be comfortable with, I think. You literally write your HTML code and you embed these special tokens in the templates that once you bind the JSON, it automatically resolves the properties of the JSON objects to these tokens and then just kind of magically writes all the JavaScript you would have had to write to render the appropriate HTML dynamically. So it's really awesome.
And is that just another plugin that I can go add?
It is. It is, yeah. It's just another script you can add. And in this app I mentioned that will be released, I hope, by the end of April here, we use that really heavily. We actually download the templates dynamically on demand, so that instead of hard coding them in the page, you could update this metadata file and it will automatically drive what shows up in the page just by the changes. And the metadata file is a script that, of course, could be generated from the server side from even a database. Now, in this app, we didn't do that because it had a very specific purpose. But that's the beauty of the templates is you can define all these templates, put them up on the server. You can even download these templates dynamically and then have a really dynamic web app that's super performant because most of the action's happening on the client side. So that, you know, people like my mom are gonna be like, wow, this is a really snappy app. So,
you know, you've described this world now where we've got all these little bits and pieces laying around. And for somebody who's a strongly typed compiled guy like myself, man, that just starts making me nervous. And one of the things you talked about was cross-browser issues tend to go away. Is this a fragile system when you get to that point, or do things tend to work pretty well?
You know, compared to doing, for instance, an ASP.NET web app that you write your C-sharp code, it's strongly typed, it's compiled, you know of any issues up front that are compile issues, obviously. Yeah, I would say it's definitely not quite as maybe easy to follow the pieces. And the reason for that is right now, as you mentioned earlier, so is this just another plugin? I think I've said that like twice now. Oh, yeah, that's just another plugin, another plugin, another plugin. Well, for every plugin you add, you still have to write some more JavaScript code. And compared to doing some of the other technologies out there, yeah, you better be pretty good at JavaScript because it will get deep into JavaScript really, really heavily and really fast. So yeah, I don't know if I'd say it's more fragile per se. I think it, from a maintenance standpoint, if you're on a team as an example, and all your team members aren't maybe at the same level when it comes to coding, say, JavaScript or jQuery or these plugins, I think that presents a little bit of a problem compared to, you know, most teams, if they're doing .NET, they know C sharp. And so if you know C sharp, you're good to go. With this, you know, now we're talking about CSS3, HTML5, JavaScript with jQuery, plugin APIs, AJAX calls, you know, and there's quite a bit of players involved here. So if you don't design, in ours, we actually went in and designed some very kind of class-oriented JavaScript files. So we kind of followed what you would do in the object-oriented world. And I think if you just have random scripts and kind of blocks of scripts out there, it quickly becomes spaghetti code. So I don't know how, you know, good that is from a maintenance standpoint. Having said that, I think if you know what you're doing and you design your your JavaScript objects, I'm going to call them appropriately, then it's actually more like doing C#, to be real honest. It's different syntax, and you don't get a compiler, but at least it feels more object-oriented, at least to me.
So as you were describing the plugin model, I was just thinking in my head, okay, this is adding a reference and a using statement.
Yeah. You do script source equals. That's kind of your using. Yeah. Very similar. That's kind of not only your add reference and your using and some other stuff, but yeah, that's a good analogy actually.
And the other thing is that like any other bit of software development we do, you know, good configuration management and organization of complexity, you got to do that stuff anyway. And those things will help you here too. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I think, where it really comes down to. You know, when I first started, if you looked at the scripts I wrote like in 1997, which dates things, but that's okay. I was pretty much function, load another script, more function, you know what I mean?
Sure.
There was really no rhyme or reason to it. It wasn't organized. And that's how a lot of the times when we go in to companies to do, you know, either our coaching or our training or consulting, when we do that, the problem you tend to find is that people feel like they know JavaScript, but it's kind of scattered JavaScript. And so like you said, if you can come around to realizing, hey, we can treat these things like objects, then all of a sudden it's like C# code almost. So I think you're absolutely right on that.
One of the things you mentioned when you told sort of the story of how the jQuery templates came into existence, you mentioned Microsoft's involvement. And a lot of us who, and I'll just admit, I'm one of those guys that sort of tangentially pays attention to jQuery. It's not something I look at every day. But some of us on the outside of that have been realizing that Microsoft seems to be really going all in on this jQuery stuff. So what's the relationship there?
So jQuery and Microsoft, they're just completely separate entities, and I won't pretend to know, you know, all the details behind the scenes because I don't know them, but in talking with some folks that were at Microsoft or still at Microsoft, they actually kind of, at this point, from what I understand, like on jQuery templates, they've kind of worked to coordinate that. There's another project Microsoft has introduced that came from the kind of original ASP.NET Ajax script library that is called data linking. That's also something that is out there. It's just a general plugin right now, but from, you know, the rumor is that might ultimately get rolled in at some point into jQuery. Now, whether or not that happens, flip a coin, I guess. But yeah, so Microsoft's definitely, like you said, they really saw, I think what happened is they saw the light here and said, hey, rather than writing our own stuff, you know, everybody's already using this foundation, you know, those three things, selectors, events, and Ajax stuff I mentioned. So why not build on top of that to make it easier to do this plugin model? And that's really what jQuery templates and this thing called data linking, which is a very cool project, is about. I just saw, as a quick segue here, for those listening that are interested in this stuff, data linking is a way to do two-way bindings, which you can't do in the web world. You know, you pretty much assign the code to a text box, and then to get it out, you have to write some code to go find the text box. It's more
right. We're stateless, right?
Yeah, it's control oriented programming, I call it. When I made the jump to do a lot with Silverlight several years back, I learned about what I call data oriented programming, where you set up your data bindings, but I don't even have to name my controls per se if I set up my data bindings properly, because when the control changes, my property changes, you know, as a result of the data binding. So I don't really, the control is just sort of a, I don't know, necessary evil, because we have to show the user something, you know.
Sure.
Well, data linking will do a similar thing. You can do two-way bindings where your JSON object, the property that you're binding to, say, a text box, can actually get updated automatically as, for instance, the user loses focus on a text box. And what I wanted to mention, I just saw this at Mix. I didn't go to Mix, unfortunately. I didn't get a chance, too much going on. But Steve Sanderson, who's a really hotshot developer, I'm really impressed with the stuff I've seen from him. And I believe Steve is with Microsoft. He just released a library called KnockoutJS. I think it's KnockoutJS.com. Let me go there real quick. KnockoutJS.com that does exactly what I'm talking about with the bindings, but takes it up even another level. Very impressive. And I've always said, well, not to you, but to those I talk a lot with, you know, jQuery and JavaScript about, that, you know, we need to move to more of what we do in the Silverlight world, in the web world. And the Silverlight world, we follow this pattern called MVVM, Model View View Model.
Right.
I know you're big, you know, you do patterns and all that stuff.
I'm familiar with it, sure.
And yeah, it's an awesome way to bind your data and then not have to be so control oriented, you know, with your data bindings, where you have to know the ID of the control and write all that code to get out the data from the control. So anyway, not to, like I said, this is kind of a tangent, but knockout.js, does this kind of MVVM pattern. And, if anybody's interested, if you go to the, live.visitmix.com, let me look here.
Well, we'll get it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Live.visitmix.com. If you go search for Steve's talk, he did a talk on this and I'm just now getting into it, to be real honest. But it looks pretty what I'd call revolutionary when it comes to data binding with JavaScript.
Now, the relationship piece with Microsoft is expressed in Visual Studio now, though, right? Because some developers are starting to see, you know, I go create this new little web project and, oh, hey, Visual Studio is dropping jQuery in there.
It is. ASP.NET MVC3, which is, you know, very new. Has jQuery built in out of the box. ASP.NET Web Forms does. Now, of course, they're not pulling it from the jQuery site. So when you first open the project, it's going to be an older version of jQuery. So I always recommend to everyone, you know, that's great, but run out to jQuery.com and grab the latest version. And, you know, we use that instead. But yeah, out of the box, if you just want the core jQuery features, you are good to go. And they even include, like I said, some of the plugin stuff. jQuery Validate is used heavily with ASP.NET MVC and their unobtrusive JavaScript, they call it. So, yeah, it's definitely a big deal.
And tell me a little bit more about unobtrusive JavaScript. What does that mean?
Yeah, so if you go look at what ASP.NET Web Forms does and what ASP.NET MVC does, the earlier versions, and even Web Forms today, you'll see that they inject in some JavaScript into the page. And I'm, to be honest, not that much of a letter of the law type guy on this stuff. I just, if it's maintainable and reusable and it works, I'm pretty happy. But I don't get into these religious battles. But there's a pretty large, you know, group out there that feels that you shouldn't be injecting in these little fragments of JavaScript and do things such as validation with it. And what they used to do is they'd have like an array, which would be a JSON array, that would be injected into the page dynamically from the server side. And you could actually see it in the source code. And it would define things like the controls to validate and the types of validations to perform, you know.
Sure, gotcha.
You got to have that somewhere, obviously. What unobtrusive JavaScript does is it actually uses some kind of HTML5 compatible attributes that get added onto the tag. So you still are adding stuff into the page. There's no way to get rid of that, you know. Either you identify the controls in JavaScript or you have this special attribute-centric system, unobtrusive JavaScript, that does it. And that's what unobtrusive JavaScript is. If you look at the page, you'll see some script references because you still need scripts. But instead of identifying the controls using, you know, like a JSON array or something, it actually uses these attributes that are put right on the tags themselves. That's kind of what it is.
Okay. And I can see how that could be a little bit cleaner, right? Because it's more declarative.
Exactly. And I do like it. It's one of those things that if you say, well, should I use a JSON array or should I use this? I would say I like unobtrusive JavaScript better. But like I said earlier, I'm kind of not into, I don't have enough time to argue that stuff.
Now, one of the things that people were frustrated with for a long time is trying to work with jQuery with web forms because the selectors really depend on us having our HTML with IDs that we can depend on. And with web forms, I think four. I believe Microsoft tried to address that, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Right on. You have done your research.
So how does that work?
Yeah, so they now have in ASP.NET 4 web forms, where this really came into play was in like grid views or repeaters, list view controls, that you have a set of data rows that are being output with, you know, the HTML tags. And as it writes those out, the IDs for those controls, like you said, they could be just ridiculous. You know, it's like from here to Australia, the name of the ID.
Right.
Because it takes into account all the parents, including all the way up to the master page and the content placeholder in the master page. So yeah, they introduced this client ID mode feature where you can do like predictable, or you can do more of a static where you just say, hey, here's what it is. I will be responsible for making sure that ID is not duplicated on the page. With predictable, it would append some stuff, but then put like _1, _2, _3. So that it's really easy now to write a selector where you can say where it ends with underscore and then one or whatever. So it makes it a lot easier to find these things. Because, yeah, it was definitely what you used to have to do, and you still do nowadays, but really before ASP.NET 4, was you'd have to use that percent equals kind of server-side tag, you know, and embed that somewhere up in a script to identify the ID of one or more controls that you wanted to get to. So you kind of had to output this little JavaScript to help you know what was the client-side ID that the server-side generated. And so you could do it and make it work without this client ID mode stuff, but I will say that was a nice feature they added.
Okay, so now the people who are still maintaining those old apps in web forms aren't precluded from going to jQuery, so that's awesome.
Yeah, they definitely, like you just said, they'll have to know the IDs, but you know, that's doable. We've been doing that for years. Just have to write a little bit of code to identify it.
So Dan, one of the things I always ask folks when we're talking about a new technology is there are a lot of people out there that are maybe want to go pick this up now. So how do these folks get started?
Yeah, great question. And I can sympathize for those that, you know, you feel like you're kind of behind the curve and want to get going with this. And the first thing I'll say is, number one, if you know any JavaScript at all, jQuery actually would just spend an hour with it and you'll be amazed at how easy it is and you'll be hooked within an hour. I can almost guarantee it. I know I was. But how do you take it to the next level? Well, the first place I'd go is if you go to jQuery.com, there's some excellent documentation. If you just go to the jQuery.com site, you'll see documentation right up at the top right of the page. And if you drill down into that, they have all the details you need about selectors, handling events. One thing I didn't mention you can do out of the box with jQuery is animations, which you've been to those pages where something fades in and out, which is very cool. Ajax, all that functionality, there's documentation and samples, and there's even comment sections at the bottom of the documentation where people have gone in and enhanced it with other details. So that's the first place I'd go, is run off there. Now, for those that I just released a course with Pluralsight, and it's getting started with jQuery, basically, that'll walk you through everything you need to know. So if you have a Pluralsight subscription, then within, I think it's almost a little less than 6 hours of content, covering everything from the basics all the way up to making Ajax calls back to services and working with JSON data. So everything you would need to know to get started would be in that course. So those are kind of the two areas I'd probably get started with there.
Perfect, and we'll have all of those things set up and links on the show page. So Dan, thanks so much for being on the show. It's been really fun, man.
Hey, it's always fun to talk with you.
Thank you for spending your time with us on yet another great Pluralcast. And as always, thanks go out to artists who let us use their music, like Patrick Lee at patrickleemusic.com and the Judies at wastedtalentrecords.com. This has been your host, David Starr, and I look forward to seeing you in class sometime soon. And then I came to see that there was no need to have my hair down to my knees. But now I realize that there is no
don't need LSD, use creativity.